Hey, this is Jake Caraway, and you're listening to Pro Lacrosse Talk.
Right off the bat, there's Lyle Thompson.
Courier, ball game.
Kylie Elmiller showing off those shifty skills.
Driver driving hard down the alley, and he scores.
What a goal from Josh Byrne.
Kayla Trainer fires to score.
You're kidding me. By Dylan Warren.
Gets topside. Rambo scores.
Welcome to Pro Lacrosse Talk on the Lacrosse Playground Podcast Network, your go-to podcast for interviews with professional players, coaches, and executives, as well as the latest news and analysis from all three professional lacrosse leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Adam Moore and Hutton Jackson.
What is up, pro lacrosse fans? It may have been a bye week in the PLL, but we still have a lot to talk about. We have an NLL Las Vegas announcement, which they have a pretty solid ownership group, if I don't say. We're going to talk a little bit about the expansion draft that's coming up in the NLL for the Panther City Lacrosse Club. And of course, we're going to preview the week three PLL matchups in Homewood. But first, let me toss it to my co-host, Adam. Adam, how are you doing today, man? What about all this news? Really, it was a really busy week, despite it being a bye week in the PLL.
Yeah, absolutely. Pro lacrosse never sleeps. That should be the new slogan, right, for pro lacrosse, man. It was an awesome week. Lax Vegas is here. Really excited to kind of dive into what this announcement means for the league and what this means for pro lacrosse.
Yeah, let's start with there. Obviously, we knew that Joe Tsai was getting a team, which was pretty big news. You know, yeah. Everyone kind of knew that Vegas was going to be probably the 15th team that was announced. We heard that about a month ago. I don't think anyone expected this ownership group, though, that was announced officially on Monday. Heard rumblings of it throughout the weekend, but Wayne Gretzky, the great one, Dustin Johnson, and Steve Nash are joining Joe Tsai in this ownership group for the Las Vegas NLL team. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better ownership group. A lot of visibility in multiple sports. You got basketball covered, pro hockey, pro golf, and of course lacrosse. But man, what were your thoughts when you first found out that Gretzky was going to be one of the owners? I think, you know, that took a lot of people by storm, and that's no disservice to Steve Nash or Dustin Johnson, who are great in their own right as well. But I think the fact that a guy like Gretzky is, you know, investing in pro lacrosse says a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's just great for the sport. As you said, it's going to bring eyes to the box game that might not have been there before, right? You saw it on NHL Network. Your full-time gig, right? You saw them dropping clips of Gretzky and Joe Tsai throwing BT beers before the press announcement yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. That's the type of thing that will get more eyes on the sport, will get more visibility to it, and it can't be a bad thing, right?
No, absolutely. And you need people outside the lacrosse community to care. Like, yep. Once, you know, a guy like Gretzky gets involved, people are going to have to take notice whether they want to or not. And I think that's, you know, the important thing to think about with this. And yeah, I would like to say that I had something to do with Gretzky appearing on NHL Network. That's not the case at all. But it was nice to see they ended the show with him. So I think that's, you know, again, it shows like playoff hockey on right now. You end the show with a National Lacrosse League little tidbit. It was only 2 minutes of fame, but you know, I think that just shows again how NLL is kind of permeating into the pro sports landscape. And that's what you need for the sport to grow. Again, we always preach this, Adam. We need non-lacrosse fans to get invested in pro lacrosse for this to really grow. And I think we're seeing that, you know, both in the ownership group, you know, that Joe Tsai brought in, as well as just seeing people covering it. You have Sportsnet in Canada covering it. Again, NHL Network's covering it. The NHL threw out a tweet, like you're seeing Las Vegas Raiders welcome them in. It's just all these, you know, other sports leagues that are really, you know, boosting up the National Lacrosse League a little bit. And I think that's important. You see a lot of that with the PLL as well, but I thought that was great. What were your thoughts too, from the press conference itself and some of Joe Tsai's thoughts and Wayne Gretzky's thoughts on the game and what got him involved?
Yeah. Before I get to that, you know, if only Steve Nash hadn't lost that game seven, maybe the boys at TNT and Charles Barkley might have been talking about this new Vegas franchise, right? It was interesting to hear Joe Tsai talk about how he really got interested in not only having one, but two NLL franchises. Now, you know, he talked about coming to Vegas with his sons for a tournament right outside of Vegas in Henderson, and how there was a lacrosse community there already, and he wants to continue to build that. And obviously, you know, through everything that Joe always says is he wants to grow the game, and this is an area where he thinks not only can they bring in, you know, that tourist, he talked about not wanting to just bring tourists to those games, but build a lacrosse community in the greater Vegas area He wants to build it for and by the fans. So that was a cool statement for Joe. And Wayne's obviously really excited bringing his future son-in-law into the mix. So we have two Hall of Famers, the number one golfer in the world, and a tech billionaire. So that's like throwing names into a hat and just pulling them out. It's kind of like a Mad Lib, right?
Mm-hmm. No, and I think the most encouraging thing too is we don't know the financial figures around it, but it was, you know, upwards of $10 million for this franchise. And it, again, not too long ago, I don't know exactly when, but I would say probably over 5 or 6 years ago, franchises were going for less than $1 million. So, you know, it just shows how these valuations of these franchises gone up, and it's only going to continue. You know, when the MLS was first starting, it was around the same as that. It was around $10 million. You know, $10 million is not that much in terms of if you're a billionaire like Joe Tsai, but it's a great investment. And I really think it, you know, Joe Tsai is probably doing the most for the lacrosse, professional lacrosse community more than anybody. You know, the fact that he's a PLL investor, now has two NLL teams, while owning the Brooklyn Nets as well. You can just see that he's very invested in pro lacrosse. And when you have that kind of money, you know, at your disposal, it's probably an easy decision for a lacrosse fan like himself. But, you know, he's doing wonders for this sport, and we just love to see like it continue to grow. And, you know, if we see this continued upward trend of how these franchises are going, that's a pretty good investment for Mr. Gretzky and Mr. Tsai in the long run. So we'll see, you know, how that ends up, but I'm really excited to see them hit the floor. Obviously we have to wait a little bit. It's going to be 2 years for them to finally start playing, but we're not going to have to wait much longer for Panther City, and they have their expansion draft coming up. And we talked to Coach Kolesky a little bit, you know, about what he wanted from the type of players that he's going to draft. But this expansion draft is kind of wide open. You know, we got the protected list last week, and there's some notable names that are left off. Now, we don't really know the unrestricted free agent status of some of these players. And I think it's important to note that a lot of players signed deals last offseason in the hopes that it would, you know, affect this upcoming season. And I think the way it works is that those players have to re-sign deals, or if there was a 2-year deal, now they're entering, you know, year two of their deal. So that's important to know, that a lot of the free agent status is kind of up in the air. So we're going to do our best to kind of pick some prospects that the Panther City Lacrosse Club could pick. But again, it's going to depend on whether these players want to sign with Panther City, if they're free agents or not. If they're not free agents, then Panther City, you know, has their rights. But if they are free agents, they can choose to either sign with Panther City, or Panther City would get a compensatory pick for selecting them if they lose them in free agency. So important to know, that's how things are going to work. And we don't completely know the free agent status of a lot of these players, but some notable names, I thought, Adam, right off the bat, you know, that our friend at Playing Behind kind of pointed out was Brett Manny, captain, you know, with the Black Wolves for a long time, now the Albany Firewolves. He was left off. Dan Coates, who Georgia traded for and was a captain, longtime captain with the Mammoth, he was left off. Dane Doby was left off. Cody Jamison was left off. Paul Dawson and Dan Dawson were both left off. Brody Merrill was left off. Curtis Corbiel was left off. All these captains that, you know, we've come to see with these teams for a long time were left off the protected rosters. Now, it doesn't mean they're not going to be able to sign as free agents. Obviously, as a veteran, they have some preferential treatment where they can re-sign and kind of choose where they end up playing. But you could still see Panther City, again, decide to draft one of these guys and maybe try to sign them, or at least get a compensatory pick out of it. Again, I don't think it's likely since they can only select one player from each team, but there are a few instances where it could be the case. But what did you see from the rest of these protected rosters, and maybe in terms of the rookies that kind of didn't surprise you maybe, but you know, there's just something important to note.
Yeah, out of the 16 first round picks, 13 of them were protected. Four were protected in the second round. So it's tough, right? These teams weren't even able to see these rookies. You know, maybe they took a flyer on a guy here or there. They weren't even able to see them put on their jersey, right? They had to wait a full year, and they might lose them. So these guys might have been drafted by one squad and then picked up and redrafted in this expansion draft right away. So we'll get into a couple guys, but one in particular, you know, like the top goalie prospect last year, Lane Hruška, he was not protected by the Georgia Swarm. You know, if I'm Panther City Lacrosse, do I look at that Georgia Swarm roster? And is he my choice? It's basically like having a first round draft pick last year, right, for already. So it'll be interesting to see what Panther City does in that situation.
Yeah, no, and I think the free agency that's going to follow a little bit is going to be interesting to watch too, because, you know, Panther City is going to build the basis of their roster in this expansion draft, but they'll also be able to sign some free agents as well, and make some trades as well. So I think that's going to be the most exciting ones. They actually have their draft, seeing who they move for other pieces or whatever. Again, it's kind of tough not knowing a lot of the free agent status, but the Firewolves, there's a player that I think stands out to me that hasn't actually played in the NLL yet, but is just killing it in the field game. And I think his skill set would do really, really well, is Zach Goodrich. So he was drafted by the Black Wolves. Now they are the Albany Firewolves. And I think just seeing what he's been able to do in the MLL, now the PLL, makes him a perfect candidate for Panther City to pick up. Now, we don't know how committed. Is he committed to playing in the box, you know, in the box game? Is he committed to playing in the NLL? I don't know. But again, looking at this list, if you're going to, you know, pass on maybe Brett Manny because you think he's going to re-sign with Albany, Zach Goodrich, I think, would be a great option for them to select.
Yeah, definitely think that would be a good one. Another, you know, when we're looking at draft picks, I mentioned Charlie Kitchens out of Delaware is another guy that was drafted last year, went back to UDell for the COVID season. Bruiser, definitely think he might be a fun pick if they're going the younger route, and maybe looking at some of the guys that were drafted in last year's draft class.
No, absolutely. And then moving on to the Buffalo Bandits. This one's kind of, you know, again, more of a toss up. I thought what was interesting is, you know, maybe Frank Brown, who was drafted in 2019 by the Nighthawks and then ended up getting traded to the Bandits. Maybe you see a similar scenario with him. You know, maybe he gets drafted and traded back to the Bandits. Maybe he gets drafted and stays with Panther City. He's somebody on my radar, but I thought that was interesting that there's quite a few people, like, that's going to be a theme here, I guess, is there's quite a few people that were drafted in the expansion draft in 2019 and are once again up for grabs for these teams. Roughnecks is a little bit, you know, more kind of up in the air again with, you know, Dane Doby is, you know, unprotected. Is Panther City going to select the former MVP? They could. Again, he's got that veteran status, so he kind of has his more control over his situation. Yeah. Another guy I was kind of looking at just based on his stats, Dan Taylor had a great 2019-2020 season with 36 points, and that was after a 2018-2019 season where he had 46 points. So I think he would be a good piece for Panther City to kind of add, you know, with if Tracy Kolesky is looking to add, you know, some offense here from the Roughnecks. So again, Dane Doby is up for grabs, but again, with these veteran statuses, it's not as simple as drafting this, you know, mega all-star team. You still have to sign a lot of these guys. As great as it would be to see a Panther City team made up with a lot of these captains, I don't think it's that likely.
Yeah, Panther City lacrosse captains, right? Change
the name. Give them a mascot. And then the Mammoth are another one where, you know, there's some players that, you know, and it's tough to know what Tracy Kolesky is looking for too, because there's some players that haven't really gotten that much NLL experience that have a ton of upside. You know, I'm just looking at, you know, from our field game experience, some guys like Pat Islanian, Bradley Voigt, you know, we saw Dylan Malloy make his debut with the Mammoths last year. Now, are those guys going to get drafted by Panther City? The odds are probably, you know, slimmer, but, you know, there's some upside to those guys. But a guy like Joey Caputo, I think, is who stands out to me on this Colorado Mammoth team. He's been transition player of the year two times already. Or if they're looking to go maybe younger route, Will Malcolm, the second round pick for the Mammoth in 2019, would be another option. He's only 21 years old too. So obviously played pretty well for them in his first season with the Mammoth, you know, had 11 points in that shortened season. So he's another guy that maybe Panther City looks to pick up. And that's, again, the other interesting thing is, are they going more of a veteran presence? I think, you know, it's going to be a combination of it, but, you know, where they go for each team is going to be kind of up in the air. But those are two guys that stand out to me. I don't know. What did you think of the Georgia Swarm now, Adam? I know that we've got two goalies left unprotected in Mike Poole and Lane Hruska, and actually Kevin Orleman as well. So three goalies. So Swarm are just, you know, kind of leaving them out there and seeing who they get back. In previous expansion drafts, Poulin was also left unprotected and no team decided to pick him up because it was pretty obvious that he was going to re-sign with the Swarm. But what are your thoughts again on the goalie situation in the Swarm's unprotected? And do you see one of these goalies getting picked up by Panther City?
Yeah, it was funny. You know, during draft coverage, it was pretty wild because Mike Poulin was the one, right, that announced the Lane Hruska pick during the draft. And we're like, man, the current starter is drafting his predecessor. And, you know, after whatever happens with this expansion draft, might not be the case, right? So it'll be interesting to see. I think Poulin probably ends up staying with the Swarm. I think they were pretty strategic how they kind of built that protected roster. So other guys, you know, that are kind of still unprotected, you know, Miles Thompson, we haven't mentioned. You mentioned Dan Coates already. It'll be interesting to see what Panther City does when selecting just one player from this roster. Obviously, they're looking the long haul. I've talked about Lane as the top goalie prospect coming out last year. That'd be a really good pickup for them because the opportunities to pick up some veterans maybe on other squads or in free agency. But definitely can't go wrong with him. Or, you know, a guy like Jordan Hall as well, another awesome veteran presence would be a good addition to a new squad.
You know, and Joel White's another guy that they left unprotected as well. So, yeah, they have quite a group of unprotected, where some teams it's more feast or famine, I guess, for some of these teams. And I think they're one of the teams where, like, you could see them going a bunch of different directions with this Georgia Swarm roster. So I think that was by design for the Swarm. They wanted to, you know, give themselves options depending on who does leave them in expansion. And then moving on to the Thunderbirds, another team I think it's similar to the Swarm, where you have guys like Ryan Benesch, Stephen Keough, and Cody Jamison all available, left unprotected. Again, veterans in this league. The odds are more likely that they sign with Halifax than them getting drafted by Panther City. But those are also some names that, you know, I was pretty shocked to see left unprotected. Again, not knowing the free agent status, it's kind of tough to predict. But what were your kind of thoughts on the Thunderbirds? Or do you see maybe Panther City selecting anybody else from this roster?
Yeah, I know. I keep hitting home the rookies, the guys that haven't seen the floor yet. But their first round pick in 2020, 11th overall, was Ethan Riggs, and he's available currently. David Brock's another good veteran presence. So it'll be really interesting to see how they go about building this roster between new and veterans. And, you know, Chris Bushi is also available as well, you know. So tons of different options for this Halifax squad, but man, I know we hit it home, but I would love to see a stack roster like Cody Jamison and all those guys go into this roster, but it just depends on that free agency situation.
Yeah, no. And again, it's just so tough to tell given the fact that we don't know the status of free agents or whatever. And the fact too, that, you know, Panther City can only select one player from each roster. Means unfortunately, you know, if they do select a Stephen Keough or Cody Jamison, we're not going to see them together again, you know. So hopefully those Syracuse grads stay together on the Thunderbirds. You know, I want to see, I loved what they were able to do in year one as the Thunderbirds, and I would just love to see that continue. As their slogan says, they have some unfinished business, so I want to see them continue together on the floor under Coach Kersey. So again, I think that's unlikely, but it is a possibility. Moving on to the Riptide, they're another team with some notable names, I would say. Again, they did not have a lot going for them in that year one. So I think they were kind of content with kind of scrapping and seeing, you know, who comes back. Obviously, Jeff Teat, the addition of him is going to be huge for them, and he recently signed. But, you know, again, Connor Kelly is a guy that was left unprotected in the 2019 expansion draft, got picked up by the Riptide. Kieran McCarl is another guy. Cody Radziwicz is another guy, too, that I think – could be on Coach Kolesky's radar. So those are some of the names that I've noticed. Jay Thornbert was also a guy that was selected in expansion by the Nighthawks and is now with the Riptide. So again, it's interesting to see some of their players that they drafted in the expansion draft, as well as some other ones that came over in free agency available that, you know, could be up for grabs again in expansion. But the Riptide are another team that there's a lot of different options, I think, for Coach Kolesky kind of to look at. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the Riptide expansion draft. And it's funny for it to see, you know, the Riptide and Rochester Nighthawks kind of on the other end of the expansion draft this year too. And that brings us to your Philadelphia Wings, Adam. I'll let you kind of take it from here, but some other names on here, a few that came over in the free agency last year, as well as a few staples to this team for a while now, are unprotected. What are your thoughts on Philadelphia Wings unprotected roster?
Man, I have to say, you know, I lost the barrage, which is better for pro lacrosse, right? But man, if I lose Liam Burns on two Philadelphia teams in about a year, that'll be pretty salty. But they have a couple interesting guys. Obviously, they brought in a guy like Brock Sorensen. John Rannigan's available. Ian Lord. And then a guy that has been crushing it, the PL fans will know, is Brian Costabile, right? He's available currently. So I'm really interested to see what the Wings do. And another guy like Corey Small is also available. So it'll be really interesting to see who gets taken from this squad.
You know, it's weird too, just knowing that like last year's free agent wasn't a waste, but was just kind of, it came and went. You know, with John Rannigan was a pretty big acquisition from them from the Riptide in the off season, and now he's unprotected. You know, again, I think they're kind of just counting on the majority of these guys coming back since they can only select one. But it is interesting that a lot of these free agent moves last year may be undone by this expansion draft. Again, that's kind of the theme with a lot of this. And moving on to another 2019 expansion team, the Rochester Nighthawks. You know, they have another, you know, large group of players available. Most notably, Paul Dawson is available. Again, is he going to get selected again in an expansion draft? You know, who knows? I think he has options again, too, as well, to whether he wants to re-sign with Rochester, which I think is more likely the case, or whether he'll go to Panther City. But we can't underestimate either the fact that, you know, Tracy Kolesky is a Hall of Famer, and the opportunity to play under Coach Kolesky might be something that these players don't want to pass up as well. I think that has something to be said. So, you know, whether these veterans do decide to sign, whether Coach Kolesky does decide to draft them or whatever, I think there's probably some discussions already going on right now that we're not aware of. I don't think Coach Kolesky is blindly selecting some of these veterans, not knowing whether they're going to, you know, sign if there are unrestricted free agents. So I think he's probably pretty well aware of their situation, and probably already had some discussions with players on, you know, whether they want to come to Panther City or not. But I think that's something to watch for too, because he is a Hall of Famer, first in as head coach, but obviously it would be a tremendous opportunity for a lot of these people to play under him. And I think one of the players that, you know, moving on to the San Diego Seals, that we really think is likely to end up on this Panther City team is Zach Greer, because he is living in Texas currently. He kind of came out of retirement in the MLO to play for the Rattlers. His brother is an assistant with the Seals, so he spent some time there. So again, there's that connection to maybe, you know, why he would want to stay with the Seals. But I think more likely he might want to play for his, you know, current home state of Texas. And I think he's the most likely, you know, player to get selected from San Diego Seals. Obviously you have guys like Casey Jackson, Brody Merrill available as well. So those would also be not too bad of picks, but I have a hard time seeing Brody Merrill in a jersey that's not San Diego Seals next year. But, you know, I guess that's another thing to preface, is he is also available. But what are your thoughts on maybe Greer going to Panther City and kind of being the piece they build around?
Yeah, I think that'd be a great fit for a new squad. Bring in, you know, we mentioned the veteran presence needed for a squad like this. And Tracy Kolesky talked about he wants a hard-nosed squad. I don't think there's anyone that fits that bill better than a guy like Zach Greer. So I think he'd be an awesome addition to a new team.
Yeah, and coming on the, you know, back end of his career as well. So probably looking to, you know, to kind of just leave on a high note with his legacy. And obviously we didn't see the two expansion franchises do too well in 2019. But, you know, in the past you've seen teams still have success despite being an expansion franchise. So I think that's going to be a storyline to watch for too, how competitive Panther City is in their first year as a franchise. Something we're definitely going to be watching out for. And then moving on to the Saskatchewan Rush, another team with, you know, some veteran names that very surprised to see left off, including goalie Evan Kirk, but they have Chris Corbeil, Evan Kirk, and Jeff Shatler, I would say, were the three biggest names available. But you also have, you know, a guy like Jeremy Thompson available, Travis Cornwall, and then even Matt Hossick. So, you know, it depends on where they're kind of looking to go as well. But give me some thoughts on the Saskatchewan Rush unprotected rosters and who you think Panther City might pick from them.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the two studs in terms of Chris Corbeil and Jeff Shatler. I mean, if comes to shove and there's not the free agency situation, it has to be one of those two guys, right? Building around a guy like Jeff Shatler would be a phenomenal start to a new franchise. So those are the two guys if the situation fits for the PCLC.
You know, and obviously Evan Kirk, is another goalie that's available. So they're going to have their pick of goalies here. You know, maybe they go one of the goalies on the Swarm. Maybe they go Evan Kirk on Saskatchewan. Definitely something we're going to monitor, and you as a goalie are going to monitor as well. And then the Toronto Rock, who will now be playing in Hamilton. I'll keep the Toronto Rock name. They're another team that there's some big names. Dan Dawson, Adam Jones are two players that are available. We obviously saw Dan Dawson on the San Diego Seals in their first year and made them very competitive. So does Panther City look to use him as a building block? Again, I know that's kind of the theme here is, you know, getting some veteran guys. And I think there's actually going to be more younger guys than we're probably discussing right now that we're just not sure, you know, what Coach Kolesky's thinking. But those are two guys that I could easily see.
Yeah, I mean, Dawson was a huge part of that Seals team, right, in year one of expansion. So let's have him do it again. It would make complete sense. But again, you mentioned Adam Jones would be an instant presence on the floor for Panther City. So either of those guys, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah, no, and then there's, you know, some other guys on this roster as well, like Reed Reinholt, Jameson Dilks, Johnny Palace that – you know, could get their names called. Damon Edwards is another guy. So the Rock also have a lot of guys unprotected that, you know, Coach Kolesky has some options when looking there. And finally, wrapping up with the Vancouver Warriors, one name that kind of sticks out to me here, they did a pretty good job, I think, of protecting their big stars. But I think Steve Fryer, who was picked up in expansion in the 2019 expansion draft by the Nighthawks, ended up going to the Warriors in the offseason after Ryan Hartley kind of won that job. Could we see him, again, sticking with the theme of, could we see some other guys that were drafted in expansion? Again, is he starting caliber, or is he going to be seen as more of a you know, stopgap goalie for this team? I don't know, but he was the one that stood out to me on this Warriors team. Yep. Did you have any other thoughts on the Warriors? In my opinion, they did a pretty good job of being able to protect their guys, but what were your thoughts on?
Yeah, I think Fryer would be certainly a good pick to kind of fill that hole in cage for the expansion franchise, and it would definitely be a good pick for them.
You know, and if not, you know, he'll probably still be trying to compete for that starting job on the Warriors too, which, you know, is still kind of up for grabs as well. But that's our thoughts kind of on the expansion draft. Again, it's kind of tough to judge, you know, can't really do a mock without knowing, you know, the status of a lot of these unrestricted free agents. But those are kind of our thoughts. A lot of big names available. I think whoever Panther City is able to draft, it's going to be a pretty solid squad. And they're doing it too as the only expansion franchise where, you know, the Riptide and Nighthawks did it together. The Seals and Wings did it together. So a little tougher for those, you know, four other expansion teams when coming into the league. A little bit easier for Panther City to kind of put together a squad. Now, I don't know if it's going to be Vegas Golden Knights-esque, but they might have an opportunity to be competitive right off the bat, just given these guys that are left off their protected roster lists. So those are our thoughts. Obviously, very NLL-heavy to start the show. We're still going to go into the PLL. We still have an interview with Jake Caraway, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll toss to our interview with Jake Caraway, and he'll discuss his big weekend in week two of the PLL.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to Pro Lacrosse Talk on the Lacrosse Playground Podcast Network.
So today on Pro Lacrosse Talk, we are joined by Georgetown's all-time leader in goals and points, Tourton Award finalist, and one of the newest members of Atlas Lacrosse Club, Jake Caraway. Jake had a big day last weekend, notching three goals to help the Atlas get their first dub of the season against the Redwoods. Jake, how's it going today?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're excited to have you on. We're going to talk a little bit about the Bulls and how you guys are doing this season. But we also want to talk a little bit about your time with the Hoyas. So let's go back before your pro career and touch on, you know, your final season with the Hoyas. I know you were an all-start in my daily fantasy lineup, but let's get into actual college season and actual games. How was it feeling after that, you know, shortened season in 2020 to come back in 2021 and make a run at a Big East title with the Hoyas again?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's unbelievable feeling to be able to kind of get back there after obviously the COVID season, everyone, you know, put short, everyone put on hold, everyone's like chilling at home during the whole pandemic. So just the uncertainty of like, all right, are we going to be able to play again? Is this going to be canceled again? Did I just waste an entire year? Well, I didn't waste. I was able to get a master's out of it. But like, are we going to actually be able to play lacrosse? Or like, am I just a student right now? And then getting that final word from Coach Warren, I think it was like first week of January, saying we were going to have a season. And then obviously just having the success that we did throughout the spring, it was really, really cool. And I couldn't be, you know, more grateful for the opportunity that I had to go back.
And, you know, talk about Coach Warren a little bit. From everything I hear from former Hoyas, from opposing players, they love the guy, right? So talk about playing for him. And he shows that emotion on the sideline, which we love.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an emotional guy. I'm sure you guys have seen me on the field. Like, I like to get after it. I like to talk. I like to celly. So being able to have a similar coach like Coach Warren is it's a lot of fun. And, like, as I'm sure you guys have seen the clips of him, like, he's a maniac. Like, you, right, you see him running up and down the field. You see him tackling Coach Phipps after that, like, first Big East win. Like, there's a ton of passion from that guy. And that's what makes it so special to play for Coach Warren is, like, you know, he truly, truly cares about this thing and gives it 110% in everything he's doing. So Coach Warren is the man, and I had a lot of fun playing under him.
That's awesome. And kind of speaking of coaches, moving to the pro side of things, you got drafted by Coach Rubior with the Atlas. This isn't the first time, right? Your first go around with Coach Rubes. You played for him at St. Mary's, won that MIA championship your junior year. Talk about kind of getting drafted by the guy you've already played for.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think the first time I met Coach Rubior might have been, I think it was seventh or eighth grade, and he was giving some lessons to one of my buddies actually in our community, and they had mentioned some rumors that he was going to be the next St. Mary's head coach. I was like, oh my God, I got to come out to these lessons and like perform. I'm going to like, this guy's going to be my high school coach or whatever. So yeah, having a history with Coach Rubior is awesome, obviously. We had some success at St. Mary's junior year. We were able to win the MIAA championship. And just being able to stay in touch with them even after that and kind of just checking in here and there. And then finally coming full circle after this full collegiate career and, you know, being able to be back with Coach Rubes is an awesome thing. And I'm really excited about it.
That's awesome. And you have the ring with you, don't you, from the high school?
See it right here.
Yeah, look at that. Look at that. Obviously, our listeners can't see that, but the video will show it. But that's awesome. And yeah, we're really cool to see you back reunited with him on the Atlas. Talk about your thoughts getting drafted when you heard your name called, as well as this training camp and kind of preparing for the season.
Yeah, absolutely. So like we were, you know, primetime season at this point. So I really wasn't like looking too much into it. I kind of just wanted to focus on Georgetown at the time. But it was obviously in the back of my head. I knew I wanted to play in the PLL. I knew I wanted to be drafted. So staying up draft night, we really had no clue. I had no idea what was going to happen. I really hadn't spoken to anyone in the PLL about it. So I was like, all right, like, here we go. Let's just pick by pick. And then the Atlas comes up and Coach Rube dropped my name. And I was so excited because I knew that this was the number one team I wanted to play for in the league. Because obviously Dan was there and then Coach Rubior was the coach. And then I think I really fit well with their style of play. And obviously they had a lot of offseason moves. So I knew it was a good opportunity to kind of squeeze in there with them. So when Rubes called my name, I was really excited.
And you mentioned another one of your former teammates that's now your current teammate in Dan Bucaro. He was taken third overall after winning Rookie of the Year with the Denver Outlaws last year. Talk about your excitement to suit back up with Dan.
Yeah, look, I mean, like, everyone knows it. Dan and I, we've got a history together at Georgetown. We had a lot of success together in our style of play. I think meshes really well. So Dan was, you know, one of the first people to text and congratulate, and we're getting all excited. Our parents are texting back and forth with Coach Warren Phipps. All the Georgetown crew is freaking out. So being able to be back on the field with Dan is awesome. I mean, we got a whole season ahead of us. So I'm excited to keep working with them and, you know, bring some of that meshing back.
No, that's awesome. And you guys had, unfortunately, a rough week one, but you really bounced back as underdogs against a Redwoods team that was undefeated at the time. You had a 5-point day, including a number of ridiculous goals. What was really clicking for you guys in week two compared to week one?
I think, you know, it was kind of just taking a step back and taking all this pressure off of ourselves, right? So, like, everyone's, you know, talking about the Atlas throughout training camp being like, oh, it's their bounce back season. You know, they've made all these moves. And I think everyone was so uptight, like, oh, we got to do all this. We're living up to all these standards. We got to do all this stuff. We're thinking too much on the field. And we got bodied week one. So kind of our mentality going into week two was, you know, let's take a step back here and do what we're good at. So offense, it was being unselfish, you know, making the few extra passes and making the easy shots. And I think that's what we did on offensive all the way around. But yeah, the biggest thing was just like, let's just play loose. Let's play our game. And let's have fun. One thing that Coach Rubio said, he was like, week one, everyone's all stressed out. You know, no one was really having fun on the field against, you know, the first game or whatever. And then we bounce back against the Woods. Everyone's smiling and laughing on the field, like rolling around. And I think that obviously comes with some success too, but like, you know how it flows all together. So I think that was the key for us week two. And then I think it is also moving forward.
Great. Yeah, it was definitely a big dub for the boys. Now, kind of looking to this weekend, you know, you don't have any games this week before a doubleheader in Baltimore. What does an off week for a pro look like? Kind of what is there adjustments, scouting going on during this time?
Yeah, 100%. So I think, you know, it comes down to a lot of film, you know, just watching what we did well, watching our upcoming teammates, stuff like that. And then just getting the work that you need to get done. I personally, I was beat up, right? Like I was coming off the college season and then like straight into training camp, 2 days for a week and then 2 games back to back. So I'm really excited about having this bye week so early. So I could kind of stay off my feet a little bit, maybe just get some more, you know, uppers lifting in, do some wall ball and shots and not such like aggressive movements, you know, during practice and games. So recovering, getting ready for the next doubleheader coming up, and then just working on, you know, what you need to get done individually. And then we'll have some film sessions coming up.
Awesome. Yeah. And, you know, you have only 2 weeks under your belt as a pro, but small sample size, but how has it been making the adjustments to the pro game? What's been the biggest difference between college and pros?
Speed. I remember stepping on the first game and I was like, holy crap, like these guys are faster, they're bigger, they're stronger. It's definitely a big step going to the pros. And another thing is obviously the rule changes, right? So like the field is much more condensed and shorter. The shot clock, it feels a lot quicker. So for me, honestly, like my style of play, I like it a lot better than the college game. Just because like I, you know, my senior year, I had a decent amount of attention on me and was more, you know, trying to draw slides and having to fight my battles to get every single, you know, point or possession I needed. And now I can kind of float under the radar a little bit with some bigger names out there. So it's nice to be like an off-ball shooter and kind of get high in that two-point range and not have as much attention and, you know, kind of be able to do your game. Cause I don't think the scout on me, is as important as it is on some other guys on the team. So I'm able to kind of float around the radar and get mine.
Yeah, you were able to get yours and float around, right, with that two-pointer.
Exactly.
This weekend, right? I guess, you know, going into week three in Baltimore, we mentioned it's going to be a two-game weekend for you guys. So what's the expectations? You're going up against two really awesome squads, the defending two-time champs in the Whips and then a good Cannon squad.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said before, it's you know, we're going to watch our film. We're going to, you know, do our scouts, do what we need to do. But more importantly, like I also said, we need to just focus on ourselves, you know, stay loose, stay confident. Let's not get too uptight and overthink things and just go out and play our game. And then, you know, maintain some health over this next week leading in, right? Two games back to back. That's a lot. It's hot. Baltimore, you know, I'm sure it's going to be humid. But no, I'm really looking forward to it. You've got a sellout crowd. It's not my hometown. I'm Annapolis, right? But I'm sure we'll have some overflow going into Baltimore and see some fans out there. So it should be a really cool experience.
And touch on that a little bit too, you know, kind of getting to play in front of hopefully some friends and family as well. Obviously you weren't too far when you were down in Georgetown as well, but you know, talk about that excitement for them kind of seeing your pro debut if they weren't able to make it to Gillette or Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm super excited. My parents were able to see me in Boston, but I've got a whole boatload of friends coming up, I think, from Annapolis to go to Baltimore to show out and see the first debut because Troutner's obviously there. We got a couple other Annapolis guys, so we're friends from home. So I think a decent amount of our crew is going to go up and be in the stands and, you know, maybe be a little obnoxious, but some good cheering going on, a little banter. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that kind of segues us into our 5 and 5 segment. So I'll start with the lacrosse questions. Again, these are more quick hitters, but feel free to elaborate too as well. And the first one I have is, do you have any pregame routines?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty basic with my pregame routine. I like to stick to it, but it's like I'll just get in, I plug in my headphones. I don't like talking too much. Like a lot of guys like stay loose. I kind of dial in and get pretty serious. So I'll plug in some headphones, listen to music, rap, EDM. I always retape my stick right before a game. Then I like to go out and I do just like little buckets of balls or little groups of balls of like 5 to 10 in like 4 different spots around the field in front of the cage where I'm normally shooting from. Just get loosened up with my shot, get a stick dialed in, and then maybe a couple smelling salts, a little hit, and then I'm out ready to go.
All about those smelling salts.
Absolutely.
Number 2, what has been your favorite venue to play lacrosse at? And that can be throughout your entire career.
That's a good question. Honestly, I think Maryland. I mean, that game against Cuse was like the coolest atmosphere I've ever been a part of. I think there's definitely some cooler stadiums I've probably played in. I mean, Bird Stadium is obviously awesome. It's a massive football stadium. But I'd say that game in general, that atmosphere was one of a kind. Like, we had that whole side filled out. Like, you couldn't even hear on the field. It was a night game on TV, you know. Playoff game, not much better you can ask for than that. So that was really cool.
Awesome. And then you mentioned you tape your stick up before each game. What is your current stick set up in terms of head shaft and stringing?
Yeah, so using some ECD Lax, shout out my boys. Using the Mirage 2 and then the LTX, and then I'm using some white semi-hard mesh.
Awesome. I always love the ECD guys. I've played in college with Mike and Greg.
Awesome.
I'm right down the road from them. So
awesome. And then moving on, kind of more lighthearted, number 4, who's your funniest teammate on the Atlas?
That's a good question. Tinny's a character. I'm sure you got his mic'd up action. I love Tinny. He's the boy. He's super funny. He's got his banter, his chirping kind of down to a T. So being around him is always uplifting and kind of helps with that, you know, playing loose and having some fun out there. So shout out Joel.
Awesome. And number 5 for the lacrosse questions, if they made a PLL video game, who would you say deserves to be on the cover?
That's a good question. I mean, like, I would say they're going to put Lyle on it if they were to do that, just because the crossover, but I mean, Rambo, the back-to-back, he's MVP or whatever, and their back-to-back championships. Mm-hmm. He's kind of the up-and-comer right now. He's kind of the stud out there and getting a lot of attention. So I'd probably go with Rambo, yeah.
Awesome.
I'll do the off-the-field questions. So, one, you're on the field a lot, obviously, during season, but when you're not, what are some activities you enjoy?
I loved golf. I'm a big water guy, right? So in Annapolis, we like getting out of the boat, hanging out with family, going to get some crabs, hanging out with friends. But yeah, I mean, summertime, golfing and boating, that's the duo right there.
Yes.
That's my ideal day.
Yeah. Can't go wrong in Annapolis ever. There's too many good things that we'd be doing down there.
Yeah. I'm going on vacation in a little bit too. And I'm looking forward to those crabs, Maryland crabs. So I'm stopping to see my family and stuff. Yeah. It's not like it up here in Jersey. It's not the same.
No. Yeah, no, not at all.
Number 2, favorite non-lacrosse athlete to watch right now?
I mean, like, exactly this day was KD. Like, that performance the other night was unbelievable. I mean, I think he set some type of record in game that was, like, higher than Jordan, higher than Kobe for in game. Yeah. I don't know what it was. Some crazy stat that had never been done before. That was super impressive. And he's a scorer, so, you know.
Goes hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
Nice. Number 3, favorite vacation spot?
Good question. Our family loves Jamaica. Gone there a few times. We try and make a trip down for, Christmas or whenever we can. So I love going to Montego Bay and a grill, getting a little bit of a vibe change for sure.
Nice stuff. Number 4, we mentioned crabs already, so I'm curious if that's your answer, but favorite meal for the dine out, take out, or cook at home?
Yeah, I mean, the Annapolitan in me is going to say a big crab feast, but I think if I were to switch it up from that, my go-to meal is, I love sushi. I love sushi a lot. Shout out Joss, downtown Annapolis. And then I would say you can never go wrong with just a fat steak. So
good stuff.
Steak's got to be one of our more popular answers as well.
Yeah, I would assume so. I'm trying to be a little diverse here, change it up. You
know, I know. I like the sushi answer.
Don't want to be too mainstream.
Yeah, love it.
That and chicken parm. I think steak and chicken parm are the
Chicken parm's like
people love the chicken parm. Like I like it. Like it's a great meal, but I don't even have that in my top five.
No,
I'd agree. Yeah, it depends too, though. I guess because you know I'm not Italian, so if I was growing up and I was eating chicken parm like from a authentic Italian, maybe my answer would be different. But I agree. It's like it gets a lot of popularity, but I don't see the hype. I mean, I don't know.
You can do better. We can do better.
And then number five, any books, podcasts, TV shows, or movies, anything you're taking in right now that you'd recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, that's a good one. One of my favorite podcasts right now is the All In podcast by Chamath and a couple other of these tech guys, David Sachs out there in the Bay Area. They talk a lot about like business, startups, current events, stuff like that. It's kind of boring, but you know, I'm gonna be a finance guy too, so I gotta say
good answer.
I'll have to check that one out. I'm listening to one my first billion, sorry. I don't know if you checked that one out. That one's fun because it's more like the tech startup conversation, but they pretty much just take a bunch of ideas that they're like, I don't have the time or money to like make this a business, but this is a good idea or whatever. And it's kind of just them bouncing ideas. So I don't know if you've listened to that
one. I'll have to check it out.
That's a good one. Yeah. My first billion, I believe. It's either million or billion, but those two guys are pretty good. But that wraps up our 5 and 5. We like to end on one final question. And since you are a pro, we like to ask, what advice do you have for a young player looking to one day play lacrosse professionally?
Yeah, that's good. I think it just comes down to consistency, right? So my biggest thing growing up was consistency. I would go out, you know, every day with my dad and shoot the 100 round of balls and then rip the wall ball. You know, watch film, watch older guys, try and copy their moves, get out in your backyard and just mimic exactly what they do. And then just stay consistent. Lacrosse is a sport. You can't just show up 2 weeks before tryouts and shoot and practice and think you're going to make a team or think you're going to make the best team. I think, you know, stay consistent all year round with the program and just keep working at it.
No, I love that. That's some great advice. Well, we appreciate you coming on, Jake. Best of luck this upcoming weekend in Baltimore, and we look forward to seeing you guys perform the rest of the season.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right, welcome back. We appreciate Jake coming on the show. We enjoyed talking with him. You know, the Atlas actually opened up this weekend, Friday night, with a game against the Whipsnakes. So let's start off with that, Adam. Obviously, the whole Maryland Hopkins vibe was alive and well in 2019. A little bit different of rosters. There's still some influences, obviously, on the Whips, heavy Maryland still. A little bit less Hopkins on the Atlas now, but you still have a little bit of that there, you know, with Joel Tinney, Crowley, as well as Tucker Durkin as well. So you still have some Hopkins guys on that Atlas team. But what are your thoughts on this 8 p.m. Friday night matchup between the Whips and Atlas? Where are you looking? And are you betting against the Whips, I guess, is the real question.
Yeah, as I've said before, you can't bet against the Whips at this point. I take them against the Atlas. I think it'll be a close competition. As Jake said, you know, week one was probably an anomaly for this Atlas squad who was still trying to figure things out. But as you saw in week two, they were able to kind of piece things together, get connected, and I think it'll be a close one. You saw the Whips go down to the wire last week. And I think it'll be another close one, but can't bet against the Whips.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Whips as well. I think it's going to be a true test for the Atlas. The Atlas actually have two games this weekend that are really going to test their mettle, I would say, first in the Whips, and then, you know, having a game 2 days later against the Cannons is not easy. So definitely a tough weekend for them. But so that's why I like the Whips in this opening night matchup. I just think they're too good. I think, you know, we saw them bleed a little bit from the Cannons game, showed that they're human, but I still don't think I can bet against Coach Stagnini's squad. Their system is just run to perfection. And I think I'm going to need to see a little bit more of a sample size from the Atlas before I can take them against the defending champs. So, yeah, I'm going to go Whip Snakes as well. And then moving on to Saturday games, we mentioned Hopkins' influence on this Atlas team. They got a Hopkins guy in Kyle Harrison, who is retiring after this season. This is his last game at Homewood. So I think the Redwoods are going to get up for this game, but they're taking a Chaos team that is probably really hungry for a win after going 0-3 to start the first 2 weeks. So what are you seeing from this game? Do you see the Redwoods bouncing back or the Chaos bouncing back?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the Woods. I don't think Kyle loses his last game on Homewood Field. I think it'll be a good one. But and you mentioned the Chaos bouncing back, that they haven't been back at all this season, right? So they can't. There's not much to bounce back from, right? With those first two losses. I mean, you saw them come out last week against the Archers, and they looked like a different squad, but they just weren't able to put it together. So unless Blaze has another 20 plus save game, I think this Redwoods offense too potent. They had a down week last week against an Atlas squad that bounced back, but I think the Woods take this one in Kyle's last game at Homewood.
Yeah, no, I think when I looked at the schedule, looking ahead to this game, I thought, oh, this might be a trap game for the Redwoods, you know, when they were starting out 2-0. Turns out the Atlas game was a trap game for them. So I think actually them losing last week is going to give them a little bit more fire going into this one. I still wouldn't count out the Chaos. I think it's going to be close. These teams have shown to play very close games, both in their first two seasons. So that's where I think, you know, I give the Chaos a chance. And we don't know the lines yet for the weekend, but if the Chaos are 2.5 or 3.5 point underdogs, I might like the Chaos to cover that. But do I think they're going to win? No, I think the Redwoods are going to win. I think they're too good. And the Chaos defense has shown me just too little to give me faith that they're going to be able to stop this high powered offense. And we had a little bit of some crafty moves from Nat St. Laurent last week that we weren't even able to touch on, but Kyle Thornton, the Chaos draft pick out of Notre Dame. He played at Penn for four seasons before then too. Didn't suit up for the first three games for the Chaos, which allows any team to select him off essentially their restricted roster. So that's what Coach Nat did. He added another Notre Dame grad to this defense. So I can't imagine Coach Towers is too happy. I had suggested in our last podcast that he should give Kyle Thornton a go. So kind of a crafty move again by Nat St. Laurent by picking him up. I wonder if we'll see any more of that throughout the season where you see some guys that have a lot of upside that haven't dressed in three games and have been on a team's restricted roster get picked up. And I like the league does that too, because it allows these players an opportunity to play. They don't just have to sit on a restricted roster. They can get an opportunity if they're not getting on their current squad. But yeah, bottom line, I'm going Redwoods as well in this game until I see more from the Chaos. I just can't pick them. And then later that night, we have the Water Dogs versus the Archers. The Water Dogs went 2-0 last weekend, but the Archers are 2-0 overall in the season. This game, I think, is probably my most intriguing matchup. What are your thoughts on this matchup, Adam? Who do you like in this game?
Yeah, I'm really excited to see this one in primetime on NBC Sports. It's going to be a good one. We saw the Archers come out hot during the second half and really pull away from that Chaos squad. And we saw the Dogs have a big 2-0 week last week. So this is this is the matchup I'm most excited about. Week one, the Water Dogs did not have it together. So week three, which team is it, right? Is it the squad that came out firing in week two, or is it that week one squad that didn't really have kind of an image on offense, right? I think it's more what they did last week. So, but at the moment, just like I can't pick against the Whips, I don't think I can go against the Archer squad. I think between them and the Whips, they're 1-2 in the league, and I'm not going to pick against either of those guys.
You know, I think logic would point me in the direction of the Archers, but I have a weird gut feeling that the Water Dogs are really going to get up for this game. Again, I didn't see anything last week from them particularly that made me think, okay, this team's definitely a contender. Like, you know, week one was a fluke. I still think they have a lot of things to work out. They beat a down Chaos and a down Chrome team that are both winless. So I think it was the right two games for them to get some momentum. I just feel like they're going to come up against this Archers team big. And I think a lot of it has to do with, I think Jake Withers is going to do really well at the face-off. And I think they're going to win the ground ball battles with Zach Currier and Rylan Reese as their wing play. I think this offense started to click a little bit. There's still some possessions where, okay, they need to kind of get it together, but they've shown they can score if you're going to throw man-to-man defense at them, if you're going to throw zone, if you're going to slide early, if you're going to not slide at all. Like, they've shown that they can score in a variety of different ways. Now, I'm still going to have to see more from them, especially, you know, in transition game, and the defense is going to need to gel a little bit more. I think they were starting to get it pieced together the last week, but I like the Water Dogs in this game. Going upset alert on the Archers. I think the Water Dogs get it done. Saturday night against the Archers, and I think they're going to win.
No, I definitely could see that happening. I think it's going to be the best game of the weekend. And again, if it was a different squad, maybe I'd say different, but I think the Archers are the one of the two best teams in the league. So I just can't bet against them.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's tough for me to pick against them too, but I just have this weird feeling. I'm going with my gut on this one.
There we go.
Don't know if that's smart or not, but we'll find out. Moving on to the Sunday matchups, we have the Cannons and the Atlas. Cannons 1-2, so they have the worser record of the two teams, but they probably played some tougher competition. Obviously took the Whipsnakes to overtime, which was big. They also cover the spread all three games if you're a sports bettor. But what do you see from this game, Adam? Are you going Cannons or Atlas in this one?
I'm taking Cannons in this one. You know, we saw in weeks 1-2, despite the loss last week, if I say the Whips are the best team in the league, and the Cannons took them to overtime, that means the Cannons are up there. And as much as I think this Atlas team is improved, I think the Cannons are in that maybe that second tier currently after the Whips and Archers. So I'm going Cannons. I think Nick Morocco has a big game, and obviously don't ever bet against Lyle. So
yeah, no, I really like what I've seen from the Cannons. And I think the Atlas coming off of short rest is going to be, you know, tough for them. Again, weird gut feeling here, though. Going back to the face-off stripe, again, I would argue that the Cannons are probably the weaker at the stripe, although Drew Simoneau did do really well against Joe Nardella the past week. But I feel like I'm feeling a big day out of Trevor Baptiste. Again, I don't know. It's tough for me to see a Cannons team that's looked so good these past 2 weeks go 1-3. But again, I have this weird feeling that the Atlas are going to, you know, come out firing. I picked the Whips in that first game. I think they're going to be hungry for a victory. Obviously, I would love to see what happens in that Friday night matchup before picking this game, but that's not how we do this here, Adam. So, but I'm going with another gut feeling, and I'm picking the Atlas to upset the Cannons in this one. So we're differing two of our picks. That brings us to the final matchup between the Chrome and the Whipsnakes. Whipsnakes on their second game of the weekend, playing a Chrome team that's riddled with injuries. Who do you like in this game, Adam?
Much as I want to call it a Chrome back, I'm going to stay with the Whips. I did it with the first game of the week, and I'm not betting against them until they lose a game. So Whips in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go Whips as well. I like the Chrome their first 2 weeks in terms of picking them, and I just haven't seen enough. Obviously, injuries, it's tough to pick them. I think they're going to actually be able to find their groove a little bit. They're going to be competitive. They've been competitive, actually, in you know, both their games. But again, it's the Whipsnakes. They're the best of the best. You know, Chrome could take them to overtime, maybe potentially. And I still think the Whips are going to pull out, you know, a victory or whatever. I just think they're that good of a team. And they're never rattled, even when they are, you know, down. They're always kind of, they've never been out of games, honestly. If you look at a lot of their games, with the exception of maybe one or two in 2019, I think one against the Archers, like the Whips are never out of a game. They're always in it. Usually they're leading, but even when they are down, like, they're right around there, and they usually pull it out. Obviously haven't lost in, you know, 600 plus days. So that's just another absurd stat. And I think their winning streak continues, and I'm going with the Whips as well. But that wraps up our game picks for the weekend. We'll see who does better. So far, we also make our picks against the spread with the rest of our staff. So be on the lookout for those. But yeah, looking forward to Baltimore. I know, Adam, you're trying to get to some of those games. Being on daddy duty might prevent you from making all of them, but you're hopefully going to get to a few of those since it's in your backyard. Any excitement over, you know, the atmosphere in Baltimore? What do you think the crowd's going to be like?
Yeah, you know, there's never a bad crowd at a Homewood sporting event. Baltimore was the first sold out stop for the PLL. So I expect it to be a huge crowd, as always. Too many fans in Baltimore to not have an awesome turnout. And it's Kyle's last game, so I think that 5 o'clock game on Saturday, people are certainly going to turn out for.
Yeah, we're certainly looking forward to the PLL returning. That bye week was tough for us. Luckily, we had the NLL to fill the void, but certainly looking forward to some more live lacrosse this upcoming weekend. That wraps up our podcast, our thoughts on the upcoming matchups, as well as our thoughts on the NLL announcement of Las Vegas and the expansion draft that's coming up as well. We'll have some discussion on the expansion draft results once that takes place. But this wraps up another episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk. We appreciate Jake Caraway coming on, and we always appreciate you guys tuning in each week to another episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk.